Welcome to Conversations with Nikki with your host, Nikki Zeberini.
Conversations with Nikki it is. Hello, hello, and thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Nikki Zeberini. It is always wonderful to be with you. I'd like to welcome our syndication partner listeners. That's Radio Today in Johannesburg, Eldo's FM in Johannesburg, Bay FM in PE, MC 90.3 FM in Plettenberg Bay, Nyzen FM, Wild Coast FM in East London, Timmining Stereo 89.1 in the Northern Cape, and Cowie FM in Port Alfred. This is the show where we keep you entertained, informed, and inspired. And I tell you that this week my guest is going to do all of the above, because it is a milestone year for her, really. I mean, she's turning 50 years old, although you certainly would not think it if you had to look at her, that is for sure. It's her 30th anniversary in the music industry, which is huge, and it's her 10th year as a UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador. Now, the late Miriam Makeba, Mama Africa, said of her, "She's my baby." And Hugh Masekele calls her my mad niece, which isn't bad. And legends Dolly Ratebe and Dorothy Masuka have described her music as something that all should listen to. And today we know her as the Princess of Africa. And of course, I'm talking about performing artist, entrepreneur, and humanitarian Yvonne Shaka Shaka. Yvonne, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Nikki. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday. Or should let me rather say happy belated birthday to you. How was your birthday and happy 50th?
Thank you very much. Gosh, it sounds like I'm an, I don't know, I feel like a dinosaur.
Do you? You don't feel like a dinosaur, though.
50.
Maybe just the age, you think that you feel like a dinosaur.
Well, my kids came to me yesterday morning, because my birthday was on the 18th of March, which was yesterday, and they came to me, they said, "Mom, half of 100. And I suddenly thought, I feel like a real dinosaur. But you know what? I just told myself it's just a number.
Well, in the introduction, I was going to say half a century, and I thought, no, that's below the belt. But it happens very quickly, and especially with the kind of career you've had, you probably look back, you're filled with the same amount of energy, and you're still giving and giving and giving and creating all the time. So what's a number?
You know, nothing has actually changed. For me, it's, just that number. And wait. Oh! I don't know. Weight is something I don't even want to talk about. You know, when I was when I was 21, or when I was even 35, or even going to 40, I used to look at the dress and I say, I want the dress, and I say, I'll do a crash diet, which is something I don't like, though. Mm-hmm. But if I wanted something, and 10 kgs off.
Just like that?
Yeah, just like that. I would just walk. I don't like running. I've never liked running. I like walking, and I used to do kickboxing, you know, as
really?
Well. Oh yes, I used to do kickboxing, and I think now I'm lazy. I'm just lazy.
So hang on. So you say things have changed since you've turned 50. In terms of what? So it's not as easy to lose weight.
It's not easy to lose weight, but I can still walk, and I still love doing my kickboxing, even though I do not have enough time to do that. And really, for me, it's not, I'm not feeling any older. I'm just feeling very good, and I'm happy.
Yvonne, you look stunning.
Thank you. You look beautiful. Thank you very much. Thank
really,
you.
Really, really.
You've just made my
hard
day.
No, and I do mean it. Hard to believe that you've turned 50.
Thank you, Nick.
And 30 years in the music industry, and that's a long time. And the music industry is very challenging. It's something that is evolving all the time, and especially recently. I mean, things are happening very, very fast.
Music industry, everybody calls it a dog eat another dog industry. It's a very difficult industry if you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know what you want, if you don't have your feet firm on the ground. I think all the above has kept me going in this music industry. You always have to constantly look who's doing what and reinvent yourself. I think if you are able to reinvent yourself, and if you are able to do all the good work that you want to do and not look at what others are doing or competing, but competing in a very constructive way, you'll have longevity in this industry. I look back and I think, when was 1985? I, for one, am my worst critic. I didn't think by 1987 I would still be in existence, you know, even though I just started in 1985. And I guess that's why I decided to go to school and studied, because I thought what goes up must definitely come down, you know. And the colder, you know, the higher you go, the colder it became, because then you had all fans, you have this whole exposure, you have people around you, you have money around you and things like that. And if you don't have your integrity, that becomes your worst downfall.
You've got to be very anchored.
Absolutely.
Do you get tired with having to reinvent yourself all the time?
You know, by reinventing yourself, I mean you need to know what is new and how do you constantly become relevant to the people and to the industry. I do not record for selling records now, you know, selling huge numbers of records, because young people, they record, do whatever, put it on YouTube or whatever,
they,
you know, social
download,
media. Downloads, MP3s. Exactly. You know, all those downloads, those MP3s, those YouTubes and things like that. And then the biggest culprit of them all, piracy. You know, I don't know, a day, I look at my phone every time because, you know, we use the phone. There'll be Google alerts, more than 60 a day, and I look, it's some MP3 somebody has downloaded, put something there, and it's like, look at this video. Sometimes you are at the show and people record you and they put that on YouTube, and it really irritates me. It really makes me angry. I'm not sure if those people do get paid or it's good exposure or they're just advertising. I still have no idea, but it just makes me so angry, because somebody out there will download your music and people just pirate your music constantly.
Because of course when you started it was about an album, it was our people going and buying an album, listening together, going in concerts. So how are people making money today in the music industry?
Well, you know, those YouTubes, I don't know if people do get paid by the young people here, they must tell us.
Well, you know, YouTube, you can get paid with YouTube. Are you saying that someone takes your video and puts it onto their channel? Because does YouTube allow that?
Well, they do. As a matter of fact, they do. And it's not controlled. What makes me angry is that I don't think that all those avenues are controlled. But, you know, for me, it's exposure at the end of the day. You say to yourself, people access your music out there, but you want to keep your IP and your integrity intact as well. But how do you do that when there's so many avenues where people can just access music and things like that, and you're not paid? So when we started, I remember I'm in love with the DJ. It sold 35,000 copies in a week.
I mean, that is huge.
That was amazing. You battle to sell 10,000 copies now, because people will download, people will, you know, will do all sorts of things. The other downloads, which are done with phone companies, you get your money. You get your money. And sometimes when music is being played on the radio, we do get paid, you know, needle time and things like that. So there are different avenues where people can promote themselves and still get paid. But it becomes very sad, because then you see these young musicians who want to get into the industry and they battle. Because everybody has got a studio now. People can record in one room with one computer and everything. Everything is digital. So people can record, but how do they access their music out there and get paid for it? That's a huge problem that we need to solve for the music in this country to go forward.
Well, you made a call just the other day about government putting support behind music in South Africa, and you obviously feel very passionately about it, that clearly there isn't enough support there. Maybe you can just expand on that, Yvonne.
You know, I really think, as I said, I really think there is so much talent in this country. And for a person like me, who's been in the music industry for 30 years, but who's made it out of all odds, because as I said, we didn't have the social media that is there today. Young people are very fortunate because the social media and just exposing their music and their talent, it's very easy.
You look at the Justin Bieber. That's absolutely where he was discovered.
Exactly. He was discovered out there. And today he's a multimillionaire. But why can't we turn that to our young talent in South Africa as well? So it boils down to leveling the playing fields. We need the government to level the playing fields. We need to make sure that the industry itself looks at this, and we in the entertainment industry, we need to be part of the value chain. We can't just always, as musicians or people in the creative industry, be the shame people. Because, I mean, with the Mzansi Golden economy as well. We contribute so much money as the creative industry. So we need to be part of that value chain as well. And I find it very silly that a musician in this day and age dies a pauper. So it goes back to education as well. The young musicians need to be educated as well, that you cannot then say, I'm making things happening now and not look for tomorrow. Tomorrow may just not cater for itself. When you make hay now whilst the sun is shining, put some things for yourself as well. So it's education as well. Because, you know, the things that we always take for granted is that you'll constantly be working. Music industry is something very different. It's seasonal. You know,
people are fickle.
People are very fickle. And people are, entertainment becomes the last thing with all the changes, you know, in finances. So people will not want to buy the music. How many people go to theater nowadays? So you definitely need those bumps on those seats. And it's important that then government makes it very easy for our people. So for the young people, I want to encourage them and say it is very difficult. But, you know, people like us have to level the playing field. And we have to say to government, please come to the party, because it really saddens me when you see artists like Snoop Doggy Dogg or whatever coming to South Africa, and they're being paid huge sums of amounts of money, and our artists in South Africa are just a by the way and are not given the respect they deserve and the monetary value that they
deserve. So what are you saying, Yvonne? The payment should be regulated, that local artists should be paid the same amount as these international artists?
Well,
Should government get involved in terms of that?
Would like to see some kind of regulation in this industry, really, because really for me, it becomes, okay, supply and demand, okay? But it becomes very unfair that some of the artists who come to this country and are paid huge sums of amount, they've got an upper hand, and then they just go. We are here every day. We are part of the economy as well, so we need to make sure that things are done better for us. I've just come from a meeting now. There's a conference on the 23rd and the 24th in Mangaung. It's a cultural, it's CIFSA, it's called Cultural and Creative Industry Federation for South Africa. So we've invited different sectors. We've invited all the provinces to be represented at the conference to then start saying to government, we are here as a collective. Because I think if we in the creative industry can do things as a collective, we can have a bargaining power, because then we'll be able to say, we would like to see this direction being taken for the people in the creative industry.
And maybe just put a lot of support and a lot more money into that whole creative industry and in the entertainment industry, so you're not an afterthought.
It will be something very good. But I mean, just the other day there was a letter from Lotto that, you know, they are going to cut down the funding for the creative industry. So it's another shame. It's a drawback. When we've taken 10 steps forward, it's like we're moving 100 steps backwards.
Continually challenging.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this incredible childhood that you had. I mean, you were a Soweto girl, Dobsonville.
Yes.
And you're one of three girls.
Yes.
And what was it like being one of three girls? I mean, are you and your sisters, were you very close? Was it competitive? Because I know your father was musical, so there was a lot of music in the family as well. How was that whole idea and relationship growing up together?
You know, if I have to do it all over again, you always say you don't choose where you're born. But I would still choose my two sisters.
Really?
Absolutely. Okay. My father was very musical. He worked as a driver of a company in Johannesburg, and mom was a domestic worker. And when my father died, I was 11 years old, and the white government took the house from my mother because she was a black single woman and she wasn't supposed to have this house. So we ended up staying at the madam's backyard, which was very, very sad. All I remember was that we were bitten by dogs. Well, certainly me. I have three dog bites on my body, you know.
From the dog in the house?
No, well, dogs
just
in the
really?
Streets.
Oh, no.
In the streets, coming from the train, walking to where mom worked. These young white boys will open for the dogs to chase us and bite us.
Oh,
they will
no,
have caterpillars, you know, and they'll sit in the trees and they'll have caterpillars and they will hit us with stones.
No.
And it was terrible growing up knowing that you were black and the color of your skin just determined what people can do with you. how you could be treated. Mm. And from them very, very early age, I then started questioning my mother and the madam, you know, to say, why can't I just go with Louise and Vivian to school, which is just across the road? Mm. And the madam would say, you know, Yvonne, the system doesn't allow you to do that. And my mother would be very angry with me. And she would constantly beat me up, you know, and say, you mustn't question my madam. Mm. You mustn't ask such questions. And me and my two sisters then became very close because we had to guard each other. Yeah. We had to look after each other. And being the last one, I remember, I think we finished school at about 1. And my two elder sisters would finish school at about 2. And we have to commute from the township to come home where mum stayed. Mm. And it would be boring sometimes because then I've got this hour lazing around at school waiting for my two sisters because they wouldn't allow me to take a bus or a train alone back home. And we looked well after each other. You know, the sad thing I remember, it would be when we knew that we're going past the old part, which was this road, and that was just the only place, you know, my other sister would say, okay, you move forward, because if we're three of us, we'll be a feast for these young white boys.
Oh, no, even that's terrible.
It would be like, okay, you go, and one will stand there, and you just have to walk fast, you know, until the other side, mm. and the other one will come, and, you know, maybe when you're lucky, they're waiting to ridicule us, you mm. know, and you're alone.
The entertainment.
Oh, it's an entertainment for mm. them, really, you know, and today I look back, and I say, we've really come a long way, she and I was. Certainly have not healed from that. But you know what? You just go ahead and say to yourself, you are a human being. At the end of the day, I just believe we're all made out of the image of God, and we are human beings.
To have to face that trauma every single day.
Of your
and
life.
To lose your father when you were 11 years old from Dobsonville, where you had friends and you didn't feel like you stood out and you weren't marginalized and abused, really. And then to be changed and everything, lose a father and move home. And that is traumatic.
Oh, double trauma, really.
Oh, that
double
is traumatic.
But, you know, I came back to the office yesterday and my PA told me that your mother phoned to say happy birthday. This is Pat. She was Pat Ferry then. I think she's got another surname now. Then she was Pat Minot, the madam.
Is this the madam?
Yes, this is the madam. And she's just an amazing, amazing woman because she really fought tooth and nail, you know, the government for us to get back our house. I think it was like only 24 months that we were out of their home and stayed with them. But she constantly fought that government to say they should give back the house to us. And we went back to the township to go and stay home. And
were you aware of what she was doing at the time?
Yes, because I know several times she had been arrested. You know, they would arrest her because she was fighting. You know, sometimes she would want to give us a lift back to the township. And the police would actually arrest her. You are white. What are you doing in the townships? You know, and giving these black people a lift and things like that. She really treated us very well. And even today, I can still be very proud that my mother worked for that lady. And the bus hated us. The bus didn't like us at all, you know. But Pat was like our mother.
From such a young age, you learned so much about human nature. A lot about human beings. But your first hit, I am in love with a DJ. Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel that you wanted to sing about these things that had happened to you? You know, this was a wonderful pop culture. This song, which was an instant hit, as you said, week one, 35,000 copies. But to come from such a traumatic past with, I'm sure, a great deal of anger, and I'm sure a lot that you wanted to sing about, talk about, get out there. Did you want to rebel and sing about those things in your music?
Well, I guess, you know, some of my music is rebellious. Who's that man calling me stranger in my land, my motherland? Mm-hmm. Because I considered myself as part of the system. I am a South African and nobody could ever wish me away. I'm born here and I don't want anybody to think I'm just a doormat or mm-hmm. a non-entity. So when I started singing, as a matter of fact, you know, my mother, all she said was that, I won't have enough money to take you girls to the university, but I want all three of you to get education, because when you are educated, you're sort of liberated. I don't want you to turn out to be like me and work in the madam's kitchen. So I want you to go and complete your matric, and if you can get money or work, and take yourselves to university. She's always hammered that to us, the three girls, to say, you must go to university or college, but I want you to be better people. I do not want you to rely on men. I do not want you to rely on anybody, and I don't want you to be at anybody's mercy. And I look back today and I say, my mother was not that educated, but she's instilled that pride in us to say, we need to get education because it will make us better people.
You've said that when asked who you admire the most, you've said your mom.
Oh, yes.
With her Standard 6 education, such wisdom and such insight that she imparted this. Have you done that the same with your kids? I mean, have you instilled, was education important?
Absolutely, because I could see what education could do. You know, when I started singing, I'd already passed my matric. I was quite lucky, and I was due to go to university to study law, and I was found. And then I ended up being Yvonne. But mom constantly said to me, you need to go back to university. I was 19 and I couldn't even sign a contract, remember? She had to sign that contract and she was livid. She was so angry with me. She was angry with Phil Hollis, who was my then manager, the man who found me. She didn't want to sign this contract, even when Phil enticed her with 10,000 rands royalties, you know, which is huge sums
huge
of money.
In
absolutely.
Those days, I can imagine.
In those days, yes. And it was cash, remember? And she was just not impressed. She kept on saying to Phil Hollis, I want my daughter to go to school.
An education.
And I think her fear was that if I start singing, I was going to be a chamors, because that's what was known about people who were either singing, actors or models at that time. They were not given the respect that they deserved. They were not held in the highest esteems. You know, you were just a singer, you were just an actress or a model, or you know, and so what? There was no big deal about that. And my mother did not want me to turn out to be a girl of Hillbrow, because that's what it was perceived, you know. So she insisted, and when I started singing, I promised my mother that I will go to school. And I was very fortunate. I met a lady called Fiona Fraser, who was my elocution teacher. And she kept on just helping me with public speaking, and she insisted that I enroll with Trinity College of London. Little did I know that it was going to be very difficult, because I had to write assignments, I had to read books, I had to write exams. And at the back of my mind, all that was ringing was, I'm in love with the DDJ. I'm burning up. Thank you, Mr. DJ. You know, having concerts.
But also your mother's words.
Exactly. But having concerts, having people recognizing me in the street, starting to get famous and things like that. It was very difficult. But because I knew where I come from and I knew I never wanted to disappoint my mother, I had to ask myself, do I want to be a superstar or do I want to have education? And I thought to myself, you can do both.
You can do both.
Absolutely.
And what an example. And you're reaping the rewards today, because you were able to take a passion and an art form and turn it into a business, which is the key. We've got someone on the line, which we'll talk to this person in a moment. A little bit of a surprise for you, but we're going to take a very quick break, Yvonne, and we're going to be right back.
Okay.
Make your next event unforgettable with a host from the production house. You've heard Conversations with Nikki. Now you can book Nikki and a range of other celebrated interviewers to have conversations at your next event. Whether it's a seminar, corporate event, or fundraiser, our hosts will help you get the story out of celebrities, company management, award winners, or internal achievers. To delight, indulge, or entertain your audience, book Nikki or one of our other great hosts, speakers, and MCs. Contact the production house on info@pxhouse.co.za. This is Conversations with Nikki, with your host, Nikki Seberini.
Well, welcome back. It is lovely, lovely to be with you. I have the talented, gorgeous, energetic Yvonne Shaka Shaka in the studio. Yvonne is sharing her stories of growing up in apartheid South Africa, finding her voice in all ways, educating herself and really finding fame in South Africa. And it's such a fascinating story. But I said for a moment, because Yvonne, your mom had such a huge impact on you to this day. And I said that I had someone on the line for you, and it's your son Mandla who's on the line. Mandla, hi, and thank you very much for giving us some of your time. Are you phoning just to say happy birthday again for the 10th time to your mom?
Happy birthday. How are you doing, mom?
Hello, my darling. How are you, boys?
I'm well, thank you.
Very well, thank you.
So now, Mandla, I have to ask you the question. So you know, your gran was very hard on your mother about getting an education.
Yeah.
Tell us about your mom. Did she instill the same values?
Yeah, she did. She always like emphasized going to school, the importance of it. And it was also a captain because I used to play rugby.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wanted to play rugby the whole time. She's like, listen, yeah, you have to go to school. Go to the academy, but as long as the school happens. So I just decided to go to the University of Cape Town, where the best education, also one of the best rugby institutions as well. So, yeah, it worked out pretty well for me.
So she taught you again the balance that she had in her life, following a dream but educating herself. So what was it like growing up with Yvonne Shaka Shaka as your mom?
Well, as a kid, I was pretty clueless as to like what was going on. Because I just always had people around asking my mom for photos, autographs and stuff. And then eventually I got the hang of it and I started understanding what it was cool for my mom to put somebody out there. And then, but like for me, like I do see her as an inspiration at all, but I just see her as a mother first of all. And that's it. Yeah.
You must be very proud of her.
I'm very proud of all her achievements and milestones that she's achieved. Yeah, very grateful to have her as a mother.
Was she strict?
Nah, she's not strict.
And when you bring girlfriends home, what's she like? Does she interfere a lot? Come on, Mandla, give us the scoop. We want to know. Is she lovely to these ladies or is she hardcore?
No, she's very lovely. She's very giving and loving to everybody that I bring home. She treats everybody like her child. So, yeah.
And, of course, your mom, I mean, she's not just an incredible performer, but she's such a humanitarian, a goodwill ambassador for UNICEF for the past 10 years and doing so much educating people around malaria and helping. Again, has that impacted on you? Is there something, I mean, I know you're young and there's rugby and there's studying, but do you want to give back? Do you want to also do more? Has that been an example?
Yeah, I do want to give more once I've established myself. And go out there and educate people and get people to follow their dream. It's never over. It's never over. Whether you do go to school or not, just follow your dreams and your passion. God will look out for you. Yeah.
You grew up in a religious environment, Mandla?
Yes, I did.
And did you ever question that, becoming a teenager, rebelling, or did your mom just keep you solid?
No, both my parents kept me solid. So I'm very grateful to have them as my backbone.
That's wonderful. Did you hear that?
You didn't even tell me you were going to be on the radio. How did Nikki find you?
Don't worry about it.
Oh, Mandla, thank you. Thank you for sharing. I love to hear what you have to say about your mom. It's a beautiful thing hearing a child speak about their parent like that. So thanks, Mandla.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you, Mandla. Love you.
Bye-bye. Four boys.
Four sons.
Listen, I've got two, and they're a handful. How on earth did you manage four?
Well, I think by the grace of God, really. I did want to have a girl, but
you kept trying.
I kept trying, but when I had four, I thought, okay, this is it. Now, factory closed. Factory closed. They are well. They are healthy. They're okay, and you just thank God. You know, with the work that I do, traveling all over the world and going to a healthcare center. And you find this woman with a child either on her back or just a woman holding a child and the child being declared dead on arrival. And you say to yourself, it is amazing that I still live. In fact, even when I turned 50, I kept on telling my friends, it's not a given, you know. It's somebody out there giving me an upper hand to say, I will give you these years to live. Because with the work that I see and people just getting accidents here, I know Mandla is, I didn't expect him to be on the radio. I know he is a little bit traumatized because, you know, unfortunately he stayed with his uncle, Colin Chabani, in Cape Town. And he said,
oh, I'm sorry.
He said, we had dinner on Thursday evening. And he said, I'm leaving in the morning and look after the house. I'll see you on Sunday.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
And he never came back. So, you know, so you can imagine things like that just happening without planning or knowing. And people die every day, you know, whether you're a cyclist, whether you're walking, whether you're on a scooter, and whether you're just sleeping and you never wake up the following day. So I'm just so grateful that God has given me this 50 years and I've got these children, because there's no recipe being a mother as well. No.
And we only try our very best, don't we?
Oh, we do.
The best that we possibly can.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, Yvonne. We're going to continue. I'd love to hear your first song, your first hit. We'll continue with the wonderful story with Yvonne Shaka Shaka on Conversations with Nikki. Stay with us.
If you've always wanted to advertise on radio but thought it too costly, think again. For effective, smart advertising, contact our sales team on 011-886-8685 or email nikki@nikkiseberini.com, because nothing sells like radio. You're listening to Conversations with Nikki with your host, Nikki Seberini. Welcome to Conversations with Nikki with your host, Nikki Seberini.
Welcome back. This is Conversations with Nikki. I'm Nikki Seberini. Lovely to be with you. Thank you for tuning in. And Yvonne Shaka Shaka and her wonderful story and her huge achievements here in South Africa and around the world is in the studio. So I'd like to welcome our syndication partner listeners. That's Radio Today in Johannesburg, Eldos FM in Johannesburg, Bay FM in PE, MC 90.3 FM in Plettenberg Bay, Knysna FM, Wild Coast FM in East London, Timmining Stereo 89.1 in the Northern Cape, and Cowie FM in Port Alfred. So, Yvonne, we're talking about this opportunity, this your parents, your mother, instilling such great ideas, morals, values. Was religion important growing up, or did you find God as you grew up? Was it something that your mom instilled?
From a very early age, I went to church. Mm-hmm. I grew up, I had convulsions when I was much younger. I used to faint. I remember, I think, from the ages of 6 until I was 12 years old or whatever. And my mother constantly went to different places to just try and find help for me to be healed. Mm-hmm. I remember just going to so many places, going to traditional healers, going, people will say, okay, here there's this woman, she'll pray for you and you'll be okay. And they'll say, okay, go to that man, they will give you medication to be. And I remember when I was, I think, 10 or whatever, this lady said to my mother, I'm going to take you to this church. And I said, I was like, I've had it. But, I went to International Pentecostal Church, Dade Modise's church. So that's where I grew up when I was young. But it was very funny. When I was 13 years old, I loved singing in church. There was a church choir and things like that. And this particular priest, I was 13, he came to me and we're a choir of children singing. Mm-hmm. But he single-handedly pointed at me and said, the word of God showed me that you will travel the world and sing for kings and queens.
He prophesied.
And you're 13 and you think, what is this
what
man
were
talking
you
about?
Exactly.
No, I just looked at him and I thought, oh, there we go again, And it was very funny because mom would go with us every time, when she wanted people to heal me. And we'll be going with my two elder sisters as well. And I remember, in fact, 2 days ago, I've got a sister who lives in London who just came to visit. She's coming for my 50th birthday.
Okay. So I hope you've got a huge bash.
Yes, I've got a huge bash coming, really. And we were just laughing when this a traditional healer was saying, it's my two sisters who want to kill me. That's what he would say. He would throw the bones and said, I see this bone tells me that this sister of yours
and
wants
you were
to
told
kill you.
This
yeah.
At a young age.
Yes.
That's pretty traumatic.
Traumatic,
to hear that.
And she will throw bones and say, oh, but I think this middle one is the one who's the real devil here in the house.
No.
So it was very funny. So my sisters were chatting about
it. You can laugh about Did you lock your door at night?
So we're chatting about, these are my sisters. How would they do such things? And when we finally went to church, the guy just laid his hands on me and just prayed for me. And I'm not sure whether he prayed for me and healed me or I overgrew it. My husband's a doctor. Mm. He says, you sort of overgrew that. And, but I've never gotten sick ever again since then. And I grew up in church and I was just told that you are made out of the image of God and you just have to accept God as your savior. And that's what I've done. And that's how I've always lived. And I'm a just strong believer that somebody out there or up there is looking out for me and giving me the days to live on earth. I sometimes think about science and things like that. And I really don't know where to put myself, but I just believe
you have the strong faith.
Absolutely.
That everything is as it should be.
Yes, and it was probably done long before I was even conceived. You know, it was planned for me long before I was conceived.
Have you ever had moments in your life that have really tried you and challenged you, and you've maybe lost your faith or you've questioned your faith?
No. I will never question my faith. I always, you know, when I lost my father, I was young, and then I grew up with my mother, and I lost my mother in 2007. She'd always been this strong woman, which I never thought she would die, you know. And when she died, I was quite upset, and I kept on asking myself, will she ever come back to tell me how is it wherever she is? Is she okay? I question myself every time. Is she okay wherever she is? And I say, you know what? So many people died, and they're probably okay. Or, you know, there's some kind of reincarnation. They're born somewhere. I don't like questioning myself a lot, you know. I just live, and I say, for as long as I live, I need to do the best out of it and do good. I'm only scared if I have to hurt you or hurt anybody when I'm sitting there and God questions me, why did you do such bad things? I always say, I never want to hurt anybody. And I always say, if I'm upset with you, I'll come to you and say, Nikki, I'm upset with you. You've done this and that, and I do not like it. And we solve it there.
Because no grudges.
I do hold grudges sometimes. Yes, I do, I must say, you know. But I will tell you when I'm upset, and I expect people to tell me, because I will never go out of my way to want to hurt somebody or wish them bad, because I think I'm being watched. And when we are all sitting there, wherever we will be, in heaven or wherever, and they're replaying this video, and you look at me and you say, but Yvonne, I thought you were such a good friend to me, and is this what you wish for me? So I'm very scared of such things.
And that really has a huge impact on how you are with people.
Yes, totally. Totally.
In a very positive way.
Yes.
Let's talk about that first hit. I want to play it. Where did it come from? And did you know that it was going to be such a huge hit? Because this was the turning point in your life.
It totally was. I would say yes and no, because I was actually found by mistake, remember? I passed my matric and I was looking for a job. Actually, I was looking for a job or a bursary, because my mother had told me I should go to town to go and look for a bursary to go to university. So the only place that granted bursaries to black students then, it was at the Race Relations on DeCourter Street. There was a place there called Race Relations where most of the black children got as bursaries.
Yes.
And I'd gone there and the queue was long, and I then found myself at the SABC without my mother knowing.
And what do you mean you found yourself at the SA? You mean you just wandered off?
Yes, yes, definitely. Just wandered off, was like, okay, I'm looking for a job, I'm looking for a bursary, whatever. So at the SABC, they'd been announcing that they were looking for young girls for as presenters and things like that. So I decided, queue's too long there. So I went to the SABC. Whilst I was sitting, a guy came in, had Kim Kelly's records.
Yes.
And they paired us at the SABC. So they paired me with this lady called Sungu. And a guy came in, brought the tapes, and recognized this lady and said, what are you doing here? And she said, well, I'm here for an audition. And he says to her, I work for this record company and we're actually doing auditions. Do you want to come with me? So she invited me.
And you happened to be paired with her.
Yeah. She invited me. So we went to the record company. When we got there, the guy comes in and he says to Phil Hollis, I'm here with the two ladies, but don't mind the other one. I don't even know her. And this is me. And I'm sitting there feeling sheepish. I'm like, ugh, I don't even know what I want here. And cut the long story short, Phil Hollis comes in, looks at us, he greets us, and he says, okay, I'm going to take you to the boardroom. Takes this other lady to the boardroom. Don't know what happened, but I'm looking at my time and I'm thinking, I want to be at the SABC. As I was standing up to leave, he comes out with the lady hugging her, you know, says to her, okay, sit here. Come, young lady, where were you going? And I'm like, I was going to the toilet, you know, but I was leaving.
Yes.
He says, come to the boardroom. So I got into the boardroom and he made me listen to the song. Do, 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 do. And I'm like, oh, irritated. Phone and no words, there's nothing. They says, do you like the song? And I'm like, how can I like the song? I'm hearing it for the first time. So he looks at me and says, you're cheeky, you know. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, yes, boss. In fact, I'm trying to impress him because, you know, I lived in the madam's backyard, and I can speak English.
Yes.
You know? That was the advantage.
Okay.
With all the wrong things, you know, I was talking,
so you stood out.
Spoke English with the clean bosses and the clean madams. So he looks at me, he says, you sure you don't like the song? And I said, well, I don't know the song. I'm hearing it for the first time. Whose song is it? So he says to me, can you sing? And I said, well, what? So he says, anything, sing. So I burst into his song. When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me. And the guy just said, oh, I found my girl.
Oh, no. I've got goosebumps. Yvonne, I have got goosebumps
he
listening to the
me,
story.
I found my girl. He rushed into his pocket, gave me 4 purple 5 rands. That was 20 rands. I was instantly rich. I had a smile. I didn't know what to do. He all of a sudden took out the tape, gave me the tape, reached out for this booklet which had the words, it's raining in the city, I've got nowhere to go, I've got no one to talk to except the voice on the radio. I picture him in my mind. Is he handsome and kind? This was the words of the song. And I came out, I looked at this lady and I said, did the bus give you money? And so she's sitting there looking at me, says, what are you talking about? I said, okay, bye. And so she's like standing up, saying, what are you got? Where are you going to? What are you doing? And I'm like, I said, but did the boss give you the tape and the money? What are you talking? No, he gave me nothing. And I left. And that's how I was found.
That is how I was
found. And the lady really was upset with me. She hated me.
Did she?
Yeah, she always said, you took my job. And that's how I was found. And I came back on a Monday.
I mean, the story is incredible. I can see a movie. I can see it in lights. I can see a young Yvonne. So you went back. And then?
On a Monday morning, well, over the weekend, this is me now. I'm thinking, do I go back to the SABC or do I go home? And I'm looking at the bag. Okay, she's not here. I'm going, you know. And she kept on saying, hey, hey, can you tell me about this 20 rands and the tape? And I'm like, no, the boss gave me the tape. And he said I must come back on Monday.
Did you feel guilty? Were you feeling bad?
Yes,
you were feeling uncomfortable.
I was the one who wasn't invited,
yes,
remember?
Yes.
And I was feeling uncomfortable because now I've got the 20 rands, I've got the tape, and she doesn't, you know. So I, over the weekend, I go home and I'm putting this tape, listening to the song, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, trying to learn the words. I don't know where am I supposed to fit in the words and things like that, but I'm telling you, by Monday morning, I knew the song. I knew the words.
You were ready.
I was ready, and I'm looking at my sisters and I'm like, I'm going to the studio to record. They look at me, they say, Yvonne, wishful thinking. You know, you have to be finding a job, remember? You have to find a job. You have to go to university and, you
come
know,
back down to reality.
Come back to reality. I mean, stop this nonsense. And what are you talking about? So I went back on Monday. I meet Artie van Wyk. The song was written by Artie van Wyk, Rick Wolf, Phil Hollis, and Herbert Kulu. May his soul rest in peace. You know, I thought I was going to invite him on the 28th at my show. The guy who wrote the song, I was told he died last year.
Oh, that's sad.
So I got into the studio. Now, over the weekend, I'm asking myself, did I just rob the white man with the 20 rands? Do I go back? Maybe not, you know. And my guilt told me I should go back, because I said to myself, where is he going to see me? He doesn't know me. You know, he's never going to see me. But something said to myself, I should go. So I went back. Soon as we got into the office, I'm looking for this lady. She's going to be here, you know. So the other guy's like, so you're back? I said, yeah, the boss told me to come back. He didn't even see me on Friday when I left, you know. And so Phil said to me, come, we're going just across the road to go to the studio to record. So I get there, I meet Phil Hollis, I meet Rick Wolf, I meet all these guys. And they're playing the song in the studio. I've never seen the studio before. I'm looking, you know.
You'd never been in a studio before?
No.
How old were you?
I was 19.
Okay.
And they play the song. This is the song I've listened to the whole weekend. And I'm like, so they put me in there, they give me headphones, and they make me sing. You know, I'm like, where do I sing? You know, they're like pointing. And
you didn't even know how to use a microphone.
No. You know, and they were telling me, oh, you're singing out of tune now. I'm like, I'm getting bored now, getting angry, getting, you know, anxious. And but at the end of the day, I was called on the other side and I was made to listen to the song. And the song was, I'm in love, love, love with a DJ. Yes, I'm in love. Oh, yes, I am. I must have taken 100 takes, you know, taking over and over and over and over and over. And they chose whatever. And that's how Yvonne was.
What a story. Let's play it. Let's take a listen to the song that made Yvonne.
Voice on the radio. This is your Rainbow Station, KMOD, FM 95, out of Wichita, Kansas, where the man says it's gonna be coming down all night. I hope you're warm and tight, honey. If you're feeling alone, baby, just get on the phone and talk to me. Just get on the phone, honey.
It makes me feel so special and so close to me. You know, he cheers me up. He makes me smile. He makes my life worthwhile.
Oh, the young Yvonne Shaka Shaka. I'm in love with the DJ. And that was in 1984. It was an instant, 85. It was an instant hit. And your life changed.
My life changed for the better. It changed for the better. And I'm just grateful to everybody who supported me at the time. Phil Hollis, who found me. And, you know, the effort that I also put as well. I know my mother wasn't happy. She really wasn't pleased. But it was, I'm in love with the DJ, to thank you, Mr. DJ, I'm burning up motherland. And I was very happy, because then when I saw that it looks like this is an industry that I want to be in, I then started asking people like Artie van Veek, Chico, who wrote all my music, to say, can I write my own songs? Because then I wanted to express myself as well. So, you know, wrote songs like Africa is Crying for the Children. And I'd started to... I started traveling all over the world, you know, in places like I'd been to London, then I'd been to Paris, I'd been to LA and in Kenya, in Tanzania. My first trip outside South Africa was in Zimbabwe to perform in those places. Went to Nigeria, went to Kenya. And when I saw how the places were, and I thought, oh, wow. You know, Africa is free, but there's something missing here. Then I wanted to write songs like Nabahamba Bazobuya, you know, Motherland, Who's That Man Calling Me Stranger in My Land, My Motherland. Songs like I Cry for Freedom, you know. So I was given that latitude to be able to write those songs. There's a song that I wrote for my dad. It said he never came home, because dad died in hospital. He never came home. He never came back home.
Is it cathartic for you, being able to write that?
Yes.
Traveling the world, singing with the likes of Bono, Angelique Kidjo, Annie Lennox, Youssou N'Dour, Queen, of course here in South Africa, Johnny Clegg, Miriam Makeba. I mean, Hugh, talk. What does he say? You're his?
Mad niece.
Also in front of the Queen, Her Royal Highness, Queen Elizabeth, President Bill Clinton, South African President Nelson Mandela, Thabo Mbeki, Jacob Zuma. Hello, hello, hello. It was predicted when you were 13 that you would sing for kings and queens, and that prediction became a reality. Were there moments when you had to pinch yourself? Did you think, oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm here? Or did it just feel like it was meant to be?
You know, I think, Nikki, both. You know, you say to yourself, oh, wow, you know, is this me, really? You know, from coming from where I came from. And that's why when I do my public speaking or going to motivate people, I always say, never have your background deter you from wanting to be what you want to be. Because it is meant to be, you know. But You can't just say it is meant to be and not work very hard as well. I always say to people, it's important that you don't take yourself seriously, but take your work seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So, and put a lot of effort in whatever you do. When I go to my shows, I dress up and I make sure that I'm beautiful, because the people who've taken their time to come to my show to watch me sing, I need to give them that respect. I need to look presentable. I will never go to a show just like this and just say, let me do it. So even for the young ones, it's to say to them, respect the people who give you your bread, because sometimes we take it for granted that I'm a star and I'm here. But somebody makes you a star, and you have to accept that, that somebody goes out there, takes their money to buy your music, takes their money to come to your concert. So you are indebted to these people as well. So that's why I guess I do all the work that I do. Even the guy at the corner, whether it's a beggar or what, if I'm in my car and they say, open the window, I do open with the hope that they won't mug me or anything. Mm. And I talk to them. And I've been very lucky. I've never had any of this, because the respect that I'll give to Oprah, I'll give it to the same person standing in the street.
It's wonderful. That is wonderful. So, I mean, So you're not even sitting here and talking about a particular person and highlighting the fact that it was the Queen. For you, people are people.
People are people. Because I don't know what circumstances forces that person to be in that situation. Mm. And I can't be judging them and saying I would not talk to them because they mean nothing to me. No, maybe at that particular time, you ask this person, why are you there? And you're being sent by God to change his life or her life.
Mm. Mm. How were you approached by UNICEF to be the Goodwill Ambassador?
I don't know if I was very fortunate or it was just meant to be as well. In 2004, I traveled to Gabon to perform. South Africa was celebrating their 10th anniversary. So I was invited to go to this big jamboree in Gabon. So that we had artists from all over Africa, including South Africa. And coming back home, I did not realize that one of my musicians, Phumzile, had contracted malaria. And it was just unfortunate because Phumzile died of cerebral malaria.
Oh.
We came back home. I remember seeing her very well coming out of that plane. She held a paper against her head and she said, I'm just feeling wheezy, dizzy, upside down. And my husband had come to pick me up at the airport and he said, please make sure that you do not sleep tonight before you go to a doctor and get checked for malaria. But she never did. She just felt tired and she
couldn't help it. She
slept.
Fell asleep. Oh.
And 3 days later, she took herself to the doctor. She was given an antibiotic, so misdiagnosed. And I got a call from her flatmates to say she's just not well at all since you came back from Gabon. Her eyes are yellow and things like that. Unfortunately, my husband tried to get an ambulance, got an ambulance. We took her to Charlotte Makleke, which was Joburg Gen then. And 2 days later, she died of cerebral malaria. It was in June. And between June and December, I have never sat on Google, just Googling information.
You
wanted
more.
To know. I wanted to know more about malaria. I wanted information. I grabbed any
How
newspaper.
Could something like that take this How could, this person away?
Precisely. Just, So I looked, I checked, I did research, I Googled, what is malaria? Why? And I thought, they say it's curable, it's preventable. And yet so many children were dying from malaria. Mm. And it, for me, it was so astonishing. And I said to myself, this is not acceptable. And I remember calling Madiba's office and saying, Dada, I've lost one of my musicians. And all he said to me was, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. He said, you've got a voice. There can be something that you can do. But I didn't know how and when, and because I was just mad. But I think God is such a smart God. I get this call in January to come to Ethiopia. I got invited. They were going to celebrate Bob Marley's 60th birthday. So they asked me to come. They said, you'll perform with Angelique Kidjo, Ziggy Marley and Rita Marley.
Oh, wow.
So it was sponsored by UNICEF. So I went. And we performed on a Saturday, and, you know, when I got there, I was just given my notes and everything, what will happen for the 3 days whilst I'm here. And they said, in the morning at 8 o'clock, we'd like to have breakfast with you, you know, UNICEF people.
All right.
Performed the following night, went to sleep late and thinking, need to be up in the morning, get ready to see Bjorn and all the reps. And I got this letter licked the letter, you know, would like you to be a UNICEF goodwill ambassador. Okay. So talking to these guys, okay, what would you like from me? Well, there's the letter. It comes from New York. Would like you to be a UNICEF goodwill ambassador because of this and that. And first thing I said was that, okay, I'd really love to do that. How much do I get paid? You know, and what is my job description? What do I do? Obviously, the answer I got was that a goodwill ambassador, you don't get paid. I was a bit disappointed. Mm. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But I said, give me a job description of a goodwill ambassador. What do goodwill ambassadors do? And it was very funny. Bjorn, who said then, tried to explain, to say, oh, no, we as UNICEF, we work with very famous people. And we think you are very famous. And, you know, when we want to disseminate information, we'll do it through you and things like that.
You have a voice.
Okay. And that was the word. And he said, you know, you have a voice, you have a platform. And I was like, is that all that I need to do? And they said, yes. And currently, we're having a huge problem in South Africa with AIDS. That's what they said to me. That was then.
Mm-hmm.
And would like to roll out antiretrovirals and talk about it openly and things like that. And would like you to help us in that. And I listened, you know, and I said to them, I think that's a very good gesture, but I would like to do something about malaria.
Malaria.
Two guys looked at each other and they said, malaria? Why malaria? There's no malaria in South Africa. And I said, so where's the scope of my work? Is it in South Africa? Or they said it will be for the whole of Africa. But, you know, encouraging women who are HIV positive, but we want to start in South Africa. So I said, I'd love to do that, but I think malaria kills more people. So I told them the story. And they looked at me, they said, how do you know? I said, I've just been doing my research for the past 6 months. I lost an artist, I lost a backing singer, and if I can be educated about malaria and I'm able to educate others, that's what I'd like to do. The guys looked at each other and they were like, okay, we're going to have to go back to New York and tell them that. But will you be willing? I said, yes, but it has to be malaria. And in the history of UNICEF and UN Goodwill Ambassadors, I became the very first Goodwill Ambassador to choose a cause.
Mm.
And they agreed.
Ten years later. Yvonne, I'm looking at the clock and I can't believe how we have run out of time. You are a wonderful, wonderful storyteller. It has been such an absolute joy. And I do want to mention that it is 30 years that you're celebrating. It's 30 years since you were given this break, you know, by these record makers discovered at the SABC. And you're going to be celebrating with a fantastic performance on the 28th of March. And I think you need to mention that.
Nikki, thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk about that. You know, 30 years in the music industry and 50 years of age and 10 years since I became the UN Goodwill Ambassador, I thought, how best do I celebrate and thank the people who've made me what I am? So I'll be performing at the Lyric Theatre at Goldrift City on the 28th. And I decided to invite other artists, you know, who were very popular during my times. Mark Alex, Pumi from Cheek to Cheek, Deboho from Twins, and we've got Lina, we've got Hashelim Mhlophe. There's a young boy that I found in the streets of Pretoria. He played Kano Chechema, one of my songs, with a guitar. I've also invited him, Simba, from Zimbabwe, to come and perform with me. And I'm just so grateful to be given this platform, you know, to be able to get my other friends to come and celebrate with me. I think it's going to be a beautiful show. You know, thank you to About Entertainment and all the other people who helped me, you know, to stage the show. Obviously, it's being promoted by Chaka Chaka Promotions and the Princess of Africa Foundation. And, yeah, it's going to be a blast. So everybody, go and get your tickets. There will be some surprises. There will be some things that people will win. You know, I wanted to make it as fun as possible.
Celebration.
Because it is celebration, you know, celebrating life, celebrating the music industry, and celebrating with friends.
Yvonne, you are a very special human being. It has been a privilege spending the past hour with you. I've so enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Happy birthday, happy celebrations, and may you continue forth on your incredible journey.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for tuning in. I'm looking forward to being with you same time next week. Conversations with Nikki. Goodbye.
Did you miss a show or have to leave mid-conversation? No problem. Visit our website on www.conversationswithnikki.co.za and catch up on all the shows.